This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome. This is Detailing Addiction. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. This is America's Web Radio. Today we're going to talk about a subject that I think creates a lot of confusion and controversy within the field of recovery from addictive disorders. We're going to talk about the role of spirituality in the recovery process. I have with me in studio today David Donaldson, who's the CEO of the Atlanta Healing Center, and Michael Daly, who's the COO of the Atlanta Healing Center. And we're going to speak about this particular subject because I think it is something that often becomes a roadblock for patients and sometimes for their families as they're beginning to approach their journey of recovery. Before we go there, though, I would like to take a moment to pay special tribute and announce the passing of one of the giants in the field of addiction medicine, and that is my mentor, Dr. G. Douglas Talbot, who is the founder and original medical director for the Talbot Recovery Campus. He also was one of the founders of addiction medicine at Ridgeview Institute here in Atlanta. Dr. Talbot started off his career in cardiology. He's a graduate of Yale University, undergraduate, and got his medical degree at Columbia University. He practiced cardiology in Baltimore for a number of years until he himself began to show signs and suffer from his disease of addiction. Through his journey and his own recovery, he became a strong advocate for the field of addiction medicine and is one of the founding members of the American Society of Addiction Medicine. He served as president for a number of years of the society and was also involved in the International Society of Addiction Medicine. He worked with NASA, helped with the choosing and the evaluation of astronauts for the Apollo, Mercury, and Gemini space programs. He also was a clinical professor of family practice at Morehouse School of Medicine, adjunct professor of pharmacology at Mercer University School of Pharmacy, and medical consultant to the Atlanta Braves and the National Basketball Association. It's very hard to talk to about him in the past tense. He did die this past Saturday, October 18th, at the age of 90. He served as a mentor for many folks and certainly was my teacher. I was very proud to have been able to have learned addiction medicine from him, and in his later years of working to be able to travel with him and help him as he was attending national conferences and speaking engagements. Dr. Talbot pioneered the treatment of professionals. In his own recovery, he was very concerned about the lack of understanding of the reentry issues that face folks who have a license to practice their profession. While the disease of addiction is the same, regardless of what your name is and who you work for and what kind of car you drive, the reentry issues, particularly for physicians and other healthcare professionals, is a bit different. And the interaction with licensing boards, hospital credentialing committees, and local and state medical societies was a big problem, and he pioneered some of the initial treatment modalities, the idea of using mirror image as a way for people to understand their particular recovery process and to provide help and support to new folks who are coming into the system. He also pioneered allowing anesthesiologists and other doctors under very tight monitoring programs to return to their practice, and developed one of the standards that still continues today, which is for most physicians at least a 5-year very tight monitoring program to allow them to continue continue to work in their profession. We, in this field, will greatly miss Dr. Talbot, his leadership and his humanity. So I would like to wish him a fond farewell, and my condolences to his wife, Polly, and to their six children and their multitude of grandchildren. Thank you, Dr. Talbot, for what you've done for me personally and for the field of addiction medicine. So on that note, welcome to the program, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good to be here. I just want to say, in terms of Dr. Talbot, his is a name that has been in the Atlanta area forever and in the addiction field mm-hmm. forever. I've seen him speak, and I've seen his writings. But it's really through your relationship with him that he's become a real person and not this mythology of the man who's saving doctors in South Atlanta. So I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. He truly was an inspiration and certainly a presence, not just because he was a very tall man, but his personality and his charisma certainly drew people to him. Could be a polarizing figure at times, but he was very staunch in his belief and very firm in his support of recovery and the fact that people can change and that they deserve to be treated as though this is a disease and not a moral failing. So, thank you. So, today's topic, spirituality, something that I think has been somewhat divisive. I know many people, and Michael, you can probably speak to this, when they call up, they're very concerned. Is this a 12-step program? Is this a religion? What's going on? People are very misinformed and confused about the role of spirituality and how that figures into the recovery process.
Right. When people call, many times they will be confusing their preconceived notion of religion with what we call spirituality or a God of your own understanding. So just the word God sometimes sends people, you know, in a direction that we try to help work through.
It is very interesting, and as we start this show today, I would like to just refer to the quote that's in the appendix on spirituality in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is the quote by Herbert Spencer that says, "There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation." So I hope that our listeners today will be open-minded and will be open to learning more about the idea of spirituality. I agree, Michael. I think the word God, which shows up very frequently throughout the Big Books of Alcoholics Anonymous, is often mentioned in meetings and certainly is referenced in the 12 steps, is confusing to people. And at suggestion of someone who is a close friend of the Atlanta Healing Center, I am speaking of my husband, Russell, who suggested that it would be very important for people to understand the context of when this book was written and the role of God in early America, in the 1900s, early 1900s, when this was written. At that time, in the 1930s, only 5% of Americans did not identify themselves as having a religious affiliation. At that time, our country had certainly been very much founded on principles of Christianity, though we have very clear separation of church and state in the First Amendment to the Constitution, it was certainly much more a part of everyday life for most Americans during this period of time that they were affiliated with a religion and that most frequently that was a Christian religion. And the word God was part of their vocabulary. I think it's interesting. I remember being in school when we had scripture reading at the start of every day. We started our school day with a pledge to the flag, Pledge of Allegiance, and we had a prayer. And that it really wasn't until 1963 when there was the ban on prayer in school. So we have had, I think, to put all of this in context of this book was written by men who were Christians, who were very much interested in the concept of spirituality, but wanted to make it very clear that the 12 steps and that Alcoholics Anonymous was not a religious organization, and that spirituality, while it could be associated with religion, was not it was not necessary to be a religious person. It is a separate concept, and that's what I think is important to talk about.
I agree.
Yeah, I think that whole idea that our society has really changed and that the use of the word God is so much less common. I can remember in the 70s when I was in school that we were still standing up and putting our hand over our heart and pledging allegiance to the flag and saying one nation under God. And you would see that and use that word, at least here in the South.
Every day.
Every day on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And so there wasn't such a reaction to that word. But also I think that as our understanding of addiction increases and as our understanding of the physical disease of it increases, there's even a bigger schism. I remember one client talking to you about, if this is a physical disease, why do I need a moral solution for it? Why do I need spirituality and all of that since this is physical? And that's such a valid question that we're having to face more and more with the greater understanding of the biological natures of this disease.
And that's a very good point, that we are learning more about the science of the disease of addiction, the changes in the brain, the changes in the physical body that are associated with being active in this disease, and then also with being in recovery from this disease. But this whole idea about God and spirituality becomes a stumbling point for folks to say, I don't want to do that. I don't want to hear about that, which I think is really unfortunate. And we have seen this shift, and it is a conversation that I think has to be held. And we'll come back to the whole physical thing in a moment, but you know, I think that even as late as 1990, according to researchers at the University of California, Berkeley, still only 8% of people identified themselves as not having a religious affiliation, even in 1990. Now, in 2013, this ongoing study from a group of sociologists at the University of California, Berkeley, they started it in 1930, and they have continued every year to look at different beliefs and different trends in the religious communities in the United States. So even in 2013, 20% of Americans only 20% didn't identify themselves as having a religious affiliation. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the role of spirituality in recovery. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. Thanks for listening.
This is David Donaldson with the Atlanta Healing Center, conveniently located in Lawrenceville, Georgia. At AHC, your success is our goal. Addiction recovery is about more than just not using. It's about becoming a whole person and addressing all aspects of your physical, psychological, and social needs. Please call us at 770-696-9862, or you can reach us on the web at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Denise Simon. 18 hours a day, I live in a world as an intelligence analyst. What I find is reprehensible, what I find is terrifying, what I find is treasonous. The mainstream media has completely failed the American people. So join me for the Denise Simon Experience every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Hello, this is Michael Daly with Atlanta Healing Center. We know that addiction is a brain disease. Addiction is a family disease. Addiction is a treatable disease. We have a caring professional staff with over 30 years experience to help you and your loved ones in your recovery. You can reach us at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Donna Fiducia, former anchor at the Fox News Channel and now co-host of Cowboy Logic Radio, and you're listening to America's Web Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. This is Detailing Addiction, and today we're talking about the role of spirituality in recovery. The interesting changing in the climate in the United States over the last probably 30 or 40 years, I think is part of some of the resistance and the confusion that our patients have when they first hear the 12 steps, or they hear about the idea of a spiritual solution to their physical disease, because we know that people are changing. We have more and more representation of other religions. We are certainly very much aware of influx of different cultures into our country. And we know that more and more people are identifying themselves as being not of a religious background, although we still see that there are certain groups that are much more likely to identify as having a faith and a belief in God. African Americans, 70% of them, in a New Harris poll done in December of 2013, had a strong belief in God. Older Americans, baby boomers, certainly Southerners, these are folks that identify much more clearly and strongly with the concept of having a God, and that God is a Christian God. But these numbers are decreasing, and we're seeing that in this Harris poll, 42% of Americans believe in ghosts, particularly younger people. 36% believe in creationism. 36% believe in UFOs. 29% believe in astrology, 26% believe in witches, and 24% believe in reincarnation. This is a tremendous shift, because certainly we've seen in the 1930s, when the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous was written, this was certainly a much more Judeo-Christian culture than we see today. And the younger you are, the more likely you are to have separated yourself from a religious belief. So we do see this. And when we look at the definition, going back to what you said a few minutes ago, David, when we look at the definition that came out from the American Society of Addiction Medicine on what is addiction, I'll give you the short version. It says, addiction is a primary chronic disease of brain reward, motivation, memory, and related circuitry. Dysfunction in these circuits leads to characteristic biological, psychological, social, and spiritual manifestations. It's reflected in an individual pathologically pursuing reward and or relief by substance use and other behaviors. The spiritual manifestations is part of it, and the more a person becomes involved and active in their disease of addiction, the more separated they report themselves to be from having a spiritual connection. Has that been your experience?
Can you rephrase that? I got a little bit distracted by the biopsychosocial spiritual portion of that.
Well, the idea that as people are active in their disease of addiction, they are separated from their connection with a spiritual life, if they've had one. They're separated from their more moral life. They often engage in behaviors that would be contrary to their moral experience and their moral compass, if you will, because of the needs to continue to use drugs and alcohol.
To protect their relationship with their drug of choice. Absolutely. And there's still such an awareness of morality that they will deny even what they're doing, but when it comes right down to it, they will lie. A person in denial is still able to lie and still be in denial. You can have both of those. Mm-hmm. They'll certainly borrow from you without your awareness. We also call that stealing.
Yes.
In order to feed their addiction.
Mm-hmm.
They will borrow from other businesses and store owners, and we would again call that shoplifting or kleptomania, but
right.
Whatever it takes to feed their addiction, and their brain will separate this out so that they're able to not feel like they've crossed a moral line.
Mm-hmm.
Because the need for the addiction outweighs the relationship with the store owner, with the family member, with their friends, and it's just the way it is.
And that ability to hold these two worlds separate and distinct, and yet still feel that somehow they have allegiance to both, is a very interesting process that we call denial.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not to say that people aren't aware of the fact that they have some difficulty, that they have broken the law. Most of the time they have that problem because they've been caught. They're angry because they're caught, not necessarily angry at themselves for having done something that got them into trouble legally. But this idea that they aren't necessarily seeing how their behavior is contrary to what they would state as their social beliefs, their moral beliefs, their ethical beliefs.
It's been interesting to me, just in terms in the field, that you mentioned the biopsychosocial spiritual evaluation or model, and it took me back to once upon a time, we would, with every patient, do a biopsychosocial.
Right.
And then the chaplain would come in and do a spiritual evaluation, and it was kept separate. It was somebody else was coming in and doing that. And so the patients weren't necessarily having that integration happen there in the treatment centers. They
right.
still had that separation going on. But it's a real common conversation that we have to have with them, because that it's still such a barrier. Being able to see that their behaviors even were own and recognize and acknowledge that their behaviors were crossing their value system is deeply protected by the disease of addiction and by their denial system.
And so when we talk about a spiritual solution, some of that is shedding light on this contradictory viewpoint that they have of themselves in relationship to their values, to their love for family, for their goals around their jobs, their careers, their future, school. All of these things have become deeply modified.
Right. My sponsor used to say that one way you were looking at your intentions.
Right.
And maybe your intentions were not what they were, but your actions were different than your intentions.
Right.
And I think that this whole concept of, you know, crossing a moral line or crossing a line sometimes is blurred because of our intentions. Like, we're not intending to do whatever it is that is immoral or bad,
right.
but we do it because of the need to fulfill and get that drug to fulfill our addiction.
And I think that is something that's often hard for the family member, the boss, the neighbor, the friend, to watch the behavior of this person and see that it's clearly not in a healthy direction, and yet the person be so adamant that everything is fine and nothing's wrong, it's everybody else's problem, and the last reason it could be is the drug or alcohol. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not the drug. It's not alcohol. It's the mean cop. It's the mean boss. It's my wife doesn't understand. It's something else other than. And it's the thing that most people around them see very clearly.
Yeah,
right.
So it's, I'm going to use a word here, and I need to be careful about it, but it's almost like a psychosis, a split from reality, that the way the person is interpreting themselves is very different than how the rest of the world sees them and understands what they're doing.
Well, and I am totally sure that many family members and friends dealing with this person would grasp at a word like that as well.
Right.
They'd probably say crazy or delusional or insane, and they're real often, because of that, looking for what is the real reason. They're often trying to think that it must be major depression or some childhood trauma or some pre-verbal trauma or something that's creating this bizarre behavior that is so unusual for their loved ones.
And I think that this is the part of the recovery process that is so important. And this is where the spirituality component comes in. I know many times both families and patients will say, oh, well, if this is a disease, then that's just an excuse. That's an excuse for my bad behavior. And so they don't want to buy the disease concept because they think that's excusing. The whole process of recovery and the role of spirituality is not excusing. It's explaining. It's giving a reason. And it's helping people to change their behavior and bring their life back into alignment with their goals and their values and their traditions within their family. And that's a very important part of the recovery process that I think gets very minimized these days, particularly when we have medications and other kinds of things. We're missing that the role of spirituality is to bring the behavior back in line with the moral compass of the person, mm-hmm. whatever that is, however that's defined.
And in some cases, really even helping to elevate it a little bit, because the family nature of the disease, they may have come from a family that's been completely riddled by the disease of addiction,
right.
and really not have that foundation to start with for many people. And I think especially now, with the change in our culture, having that spiritual compass to come back to is actually a new experience.
Right. More people are coming without that experience to go back to.
Right.
They
really
never had it.
And they'll use the phrase, I'm spiritual but not religious, because that phrase has become a part of our culture.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really more of a, let's not talk about this.
Right.
Rather than I'm spiritual.
Don't bother me.
Yeah, that's not a subject. And, you know, we don't talk about that at good tables, fine tables.
Exactly. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the role of spirituality in recovery. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. Thanks for listening.
Hello, this is Michael Daly with Atlanta Healing Center. We know that addiction is a brain disease. Addiction is a family disease. Addiction is a treatable disease. We have a caring professional staff with over 30 years experience to help you and your loved ones in your recovery. You can reach us at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options, such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is Donna Fiducia, former anchor at the Fox News Channel, and now co-host of Cowboy Logic Radio, and you're listening to America's Web Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. This is Detailing Addiction. Today we're talking about the role of spirituality in the process of recovery. And we've mentioned that a big stumbling block to many people, particularly accepting aftercare programs that involve a 12-step recovery, the word God that frequently shows up in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and in the 12 steps, putting it in context of that was a very common framework back in the 1930s when Bill W. and Dr. Bob and the first 100 members of the of Alcoholics Anonymous put together this book. It was a much more common experience. It was a word that was frequently used, and through at least some of us here at this table, it was a big, important part of even our school day rituals for many years. So that word has become a problem, and I think that part of what's missing is the understanding that while they use the word God with great reverence and respect, they're also very clear that this is a spiritual program and not a religious program. Mm. And that you don't have to have a religious background. You don't have to find your connection with your higher power through an organized religion, although many people do. Mm-hmm. But it's essential to have spirituality as part of the recovery process. And even the American Society of Addiction Medicine, which is very much based in the science of addiction and the science of the brain and the recovery process, states in their definition that this is a spiritual as well as a biopsychosocial, physical, emotional, spiritual problem that has to have a solution in each of those arenas, okay, including the spiritual solution. So when you're trying to explain to somebody that, how do you do it?
Well, for me, I really spent a lot of time with them, getting them to define for themselves what spirituality really means, and helping them see that they have a lot of misunderstandings and misconceptions, and for a lot of people just absolutely no real understanding at all. So getting them just comfortable with talking about the word spirituality or talking about what gives me hope,
right,
or and what situations allows me to experience the amazement and awe of the world, and beginning to just let them see that is spirituality. Finding that awareness that they can't do this by themselves, that they've tried to do this by themselves many, many times. They've mm-hmm. tried controlling it by writing down, journaling how many times they're going to drink or use in a day. They've tried putting their commitment into their family members and turning over their medications or their alcohol to their family members and saying, you dispense this, and they've gotten around that. They've tried only drinking on weekends and only drinking on Fridays. And
only wine, not beer or liquor. Yeah.
Just pot. I'm not going to do any of the hard stuff. And none of the things that they try to do by themselves solves the problem. And they find that they keep getting back and they keep getting worse and worse and worse. So first, just helping them recognize a basic step one, that no matter what they try to do to control it, their life gets worse.
Well, and that's the beauty of the 12 steps, is that as you go from step one to step two and on up the number count, if you do the step prior to the next one, you're almost assured that your spirituality will become defined for you.
Right.
That you'll find it.
That
it'll,
you will find
it'll be in there.
It will be in there. It will, that without you even trying, you will start to intrinsically understand it.
And you will define it for yourself.
Exactly.
That it is not your sponsor or the group or the big book or your therapist or your psychiatrist or your preacher or your mother. It's for you to find for yourself, and part of that comes through some basic moral concepts such as honesty. living an honest life, being honest about your dealings with other people, developing a sense of service and empathy for others, taking responsibility yourself for the things that you do right and the things that you do wrong, and correcting your mistakes as you go along. Trying to live an honest life that is of service to others and a healthy life for yourself. That's the role of the 12 steps. And spirituality helps you shed a light on all of that so that you know how to do that for yourself.
Right. You also become grateful, and you also start to have gratitude, mm-hmm. and you also start to look at what you do have rather than what you do not have. So when you can start to look at all the good things that you're experiencing or that you're gaining, and not look at what you don't have and what you're wanting, but thankful for mm-hmm. what you have, you start to see that there is a power greater than yourself.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of joy in your life. When I was working at Talbot, one of my coworkers had a sign on the wall that said, "Lord, help me want what I have." the same idea about gratitude. Mm-hmm. Let me see the beauty in the world as it is. Let me see the gifts that I have, and let me be grateful to the people around me, rather than constantly looking. And that's the problem for someone with addiction, is they're constantly looking for something outside of themselves to make them feel different, to make them feel better. And this is an inside job, as we tell the patients all the time.
Whenever somebody comes back to group or comes to an individual session and talks about having had a relapse, they always want to get to that place of I'm okay now, at least nothing bad happened, and they get to that place mm-hmm. of finding hope. And I always have to bring them back to, okay, that's wonderful, and I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad you're being honest about it, but now we need to look at what led to this.
Right.
And inevitably, part of the dynamics that led up to it was they put themselves in a place where they were in that wanting what everyone else has. Being at a party and everybody else is drinking, and how come I'm the only one who has to stand here and not? You know, so that idea that getting into I want what you have as opposed to I'm grateful for what I have is mm-hmm. a huge piece of what leads people back mm-hmm. into their active addiction.
And these changes have to occur over a period of time, and they have to occur during conversations. I can't give someone a medication to make them understand this. I can give them a medication to help them with their symptoms of withdrawal. We can give them supplements to help them be healthier and stronger. We can treat their medical complications. We can help them with their psychiatric problems. All of those things may have a medical solution. But that's only one part, and sometimes a very small part, of this whole process of recovery.
Right, and sometimes that medical interjection or whatever brings them to the point of being able to accept
right.
the spiritual portion. Until they get to a certain point, they can't even fathom. You know, you can't even fathom that you'll feel good enough to care about anything other than not being sick or not being, wanting something that you feel is so necessary to keep you going. You know?
And the whole process of this is a movement inside the brain. Dr. Goulson has written a wonderful book called Just Listen. He's a psychiatrist, and this particular book was written for corporate executives to help them be more effective in their teamwork and to help them be more effective as people, recognizing that a lot of times we operate out of a position of panic, that the deep structures of our brain, in the same location where the disease of addiction lies, is our amygdala, our little almond-shaped part of our brain that is constantly scanning our surroundings and saying, am I safe, am I safe, am I safe? And Dr. Goulson talks about when you're in that panic place, you're in survival mode, you're in reaction mode, you're not in problem-solving mode. Most of our patients with addiction have been living for a period of time, sometimes for years, in that deep structure of their brain, and they're not able to access the higher levels of the brain that help them to problem solve, that help them to make good decisions, that help them to think things through and go back to their moral compass. I keep using that word, and that's probably inappropriate, but I'm trying to see that it's different parts of the brain that are lost, not missing, but the access is lost when you're active in the disease of addiction. And it's through conversations about spirituality, it's through conversations, speaking how you actually feel in an honest way, according to Dr. Goulson and the work that he's done looking at functional MRI, you actually see the energy in the brain shift. And just saying, I feel scared, allows you to access your temporal lobe, allows you to then move on to solution in your prefrontal cortex. If you don't say how you're feeling, if you keep it inside and you ruminate and you nurse that feeling of fear and you don't say it, you don't ask for help, this isn't about saying, oh, I'm fine. This isn't a mantra. This is literally saying how you feel. Allows you to move up in your brain to the part of your brain that can help you problem solve and change your situation. So the talking part of recovery and the spiritual part of recovery is a physiological process that is critical for the survival of that person. If they stay in primitive addiction part of their brain and are only reactive, they are not going to be able to maintain sobriety, and they probably will lose their life. It's really that seriously important and often overlooked, I think, and there's a prejudice against it because of some of the language that we see in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous.
But and that point that the denial goes both directions, the denial of I need a spiritual solution,
right,
as well as the denial that I'm going to die.
Right.
And when I'm talking with people and emphasizing that this is a disease that kills, and it's a disease that kills by first humiliating and taking everything you have and isolating you, and so really waking up in both directions. You know, it's not just that you're living under the standard that you want to have, or you're being a bad boy or something. It's that you have a disease that's going to kill you, and if you don't get to this solution, that is the picture. With the solution really being getting support from other people, being able to reach out, being able to help other people, finding for yourself some sort of higher power, whether you call it God or you call it the group support or you call it
Mother Nature,
belief in reason.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen that to be very, very effective for a lot of people. And eventually they'll come to the place of, well, where does this reason come from? And they find their own understanding. But for them, at least the start of, at least today I can believe in reason, gives them the start to be able to start recovering and healing.
And that process is directed through working the 12 steps. It's a very nice, it's not the only roadmap, but it's a very nice roadmap to help people find these solutions. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hello, this is Michael Daly with Atlanta Healing Center. We know that addiction is a brain disease. Addiction is a family disease. Addiction is a treatable disease. We have a caring professional staff with over 30 years experience to help you and your loved ones in your recovery. You can reach us at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings at 9 o'clock for Medicine on Call. On Medicine on Call, we talk about more than medicine. It's about how to take control of your mind, body, and spirit.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Susan Blank. This is Detailing Addiction, and I have David Donaldson and Michael Daly with me today, and we're talking about the role of spirituality in the process of recovery. David, a few moments ago, you mentioned the idea that because we're learning more about the science of the brain, people are wondering why they need a spiritual solution to a physical disease or problem. And the beauty of all this is that there are some really very bright, well-educated scientists that are spending time looking at this whole concept of spirituality. There is a whole field called neurotheology that is looking at how the brain changes, what are the processes, even down to a genetic level or a physical neurotransmitter chemical messenger level in the brain, the changes that happen when people have a spiritual experience. Dr. Andrew Newberg at the University of Pennsylvania is a neuroradiologist. He spent a lot of time looking at this whole process, and he's written a number of books, including Why God Won't Go Away. He talks about this special part of our brain that's at the crown of our head, the top part of our head, called the orientation awareness association area. And this is a real important part of our brain that becomes fully developed when we're 6, 7, 8 years old. This is the part of the brain that tells us where we are located in space, how far it is from me to you, where the edge of the table is, where the edge of the seat is. When this part of our brain gets fully developed, we won't fall out of bed anymore. So we can go and sleep in a hotel, we can go visit our parents, we can stay at a friend's house, and even though the bed is different, the size of the bed is different, the room is different, we won't fall out of bed because this part of our brain is constantly active and telling us that we're a separate person from other people and other objects. And it is fully active even under general anesthesia. People don't roll off the operating room table even when they're unconscious. And the issue is in part because this part of the brain is very active. Dr. Newberg did a number of studies with people who have described having spiritual experiences, whether this is a Buddhist monk, whether this is a Catholic nun, people who discuss these transcendent physical, emotional changes that occur at the height of their spiritual practice. He put some of these folks in a functional MRI machine, and they rigged up a way for this individual to let them know when in the process of praying or chanting or meditating they had reached that state of connection with their higher power and the transcendent feeling of a spiritual experience. So they actually simply tied a string to the finger so that the person could just barely move their finger and let the researchers know it's at this point. Without question and consistent across all of these individuals, regardless of their religious affiliation, their age, their orientation, when they had their spiritual experience through their prayer, their meditation, their chanting, this part of their brain shut down. and they no longer experience themselves as a separate being, but they describe themselves as being one with God, one with nature, one with the universe, whatever language what made sense in their culture and in their theology. However they used it, it was the same description, and it was the same thing that happened. We all have this capacity to have a spiritual experience. It is something that is part of our brain, and that there is a change that happens when we get there, however we get there. So this is something that is important enough that we're hardwired to have it. It's something that's important enough that that it's been there probably since the beginning of time. And it is part of the process that we're hoping that people can achieve, which is this sense of oneness, of unity, of a spiritual connection with a higher power that really changes people's lives. And that's part of this process. It may not be a bolt of lightning. It may not be so transformational, but there is a change in how people feel when they reach gratitude, like you talked about, Michael, or when they have these changes that can occur, and you can feel it. For me personally, some of the most spiritual experiences that I think I've experienced have been actually attending a 12-step meeting, where people are being truly open and honest and vulnerable and grateful. It's a remarkable experience.
Yeah, it's absolutely something that you feel. And I've experienced it in meetings. I've experienced it in groups. And you hear it. When a person goes to a level of honesty where mm-hmm. they actually reveal part of who they are or part of their real truth, and you see that little moment of vulnerability mm-hmm. and you see the room just respond to it and want to reach out and support and help and relate, mm-hmm. That the entire room becomes a spiritual place, and you don't even have to point it out. Everybody knows it. You don't have to say we just had a spiritual moment,
right?
Because it's something that
everyone feels.
Everybody gets.
Mm-hmm. And it is through working the steps. And I think at the break we were talking about that importance of changing the behavior in order to change your experience.
Right,
Michael, you had an interesting quote.
You can act your way to better thinking, but you can't think your way to better acting.
And that's one of those phrases that a good sponsor will say to their sponsees mm-hmm. or you mm-hmm. hear at meetings. That you're not going to think your way through this. You're not going to think your way out of the box. You got to get to work and start changing your actions.
Mm-hmm. And that's where one step at a time, not the only path. There are certainly a number of different ways in which people approach this type of recovery from the disease of addiction, but certainly the most common and the one that's most available is the 12 steps. Mm-hmm. And working these steps is that roadmap mm-hmm. to understanding yourself.
Yeah. A lot of people, especially people who have this barrier against God and against spirituality, will look at the steps and they'll decide, okay, I can do the first part of step one and the second part of step two, and then I'll do a fourth step and the fifth step, and then I'm going to jump to making amends, and then things will all be better and I'll be fine. And they want to jump over the parts of the 12 steps that have some sort of spiritual peace or God peace.
Mm-hmm.
What I found is that while they're doing those jumps, they continue to have relapses, they continue to feel like the 12 steps don't work, they continue to think that this is just a bunch of baloney. But then when you can slow them down and get them to do one step at a time, and in particular to really look at the third step, which is about turning your will over to a higher power, and the seventh step, which is really about asking him to take away some of your character defects, or all of your character defects,
right.
In fact, that then those changes tend to just start happening. You'll be amazed before you're halfway through is a quote that's in the promises of the 12 steps. There are other recovery programs around. There's Smart Recovery. There's Rational Recovery. There's
Celebrate Recovery.
Celebrate Recovery. Celebrate Recovery tends to follow a 12-step format with a specific higher power. But the other programs don't have the access. They don't have nearly as many meetings. And what I tend to find even there is that their belief and their rational becomes their own form of spirituality, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are many roads that take you there, and not one size fits all, certainly. But the concept of the denial of this illness, that you have a problem, that you need some help, that there is an answer, is what you have to go through, regardless of where you start or what path you choose. If you don't have that kind of spiritual experience and find a way to change your behavior and overcome this problem of denial, you're going to have a very difficult road.
Well, it becomes evident also when you have somebody that comes in that says that they are a religious person, but they're still having very much difficulty with their addiction, because for them it's not internal,
right?
And until it becomes internal and becomes personal to them, they are not getting the relief from it. And I think that sometimes that's where religion turns into spirituality, is when it stops being about the institution and it starts being about yourself within.
And that goes back to the idea that this is an inside job, that this is not this is not something that someone can do for you. It's not something someone can buy for you. It's not something that you can think your way through. It's an internal change that results in external change.
Exactly.
And so it's absolutely not something that you can do alone.
Right.
You have to have external support and people in your life, people who are opening up and sharing their experience with it, for you to be able to wake up and come out of it too.
Thank you very much for your help today with exploring this subject. I hope that our listeners will be open and will spend some time thinking about this and looking at the recovery of their loved ones and their own recovery. And thank you again to Dr. G. Douglas Talbot for leading the way in the search for answers for this very strange and baffling disease called the disease of addiction. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Detailing Addiction.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.